Mary Ponsonby's eldest son, John, described his mother as a small lady with a starched cap that matched the Queen's and well-made hands. Those beautiful hands were happiest when they were operating a blowtorch. He recalled, her chief delight was her own workshop, which she had erected in the garden. Here she could be found with her lathe, her carpenter's bench, wood-carving tools, blowpipes, and tools for repoussé work. Mary Elizabeth Bulteel was born on the 21st of September, 1832, the year of the Great Reform Bill. Her grandfather, Lord Grey, was Prime Minister, and the bill expanding the electorate was his greatest achievement. He was an ancestor of whom Mary was justly proud. John Crocker Bulteel, Mary's father, married Lady Elizabeth Grey in 1826 and brought her to live at one of his family's houses near Lynham, west of Plymouth. One of the great Whig hostesses, Lady Granville, visited them and found them devoted to each other, fond of all the same things, their children drawing like artists, singing like nightingales. In 1837, Mary's father inherited a much bigger house, Fleet. He embarked on an ambitious rebuilding of the house, so that it resembled an enormous castle. This was a work of extravagance as well as taste. It completely bankrupted Bulteel. And then he became ill. His doctor instructed him not to travel, but in a grand gesture he drove up to Hampton Court to look one last time at the Raphael drawings. He died in London, aged 50. Soon after her husband's death, Elizabeth Bulteel discovered the terrible condition of the estate finances. She shut Fleet up and later sold it. Salvaging enough money to purchase the lease of a small London townhouse, she took Mary and her two younger daughters, Georgiana and Emily, to Eaton Place West. All at once, Mary's family came steeply down in the world, an experience she shared with Henry Ponsonby, whose father had also died when he was young, leaving his mother in straitened circumstances. Also, like the Ponsonbys, who came within the orbit of London by moving into grace and favour apartments at Hampton Court, Mary Bulteel now had her first sustained experience of the metropolis, with all its concerts, parties, and political hum. Like Henry, she developed a taste for it she never lost. When Mary was first appointed a maid of honour at the age of 21, she was riveted by how the court lived and what the Queen did all day. Maids of honour were companions rather than servants. They did very little except to provide company on a walk, to run back to fetch a forgotten shawl, to chat amiably to the Queen's guests at dinner, and to sing prettily afterwards. Mary believed that having family at court had led in part to her appointment. Her aunt, Caroline Barrington, was a lady-in-waiting, and her uncle, Charles Grey, had been a equerry to the Queen almost since her accession, and private secretary to Prince Albert since 1849. The Queen recorded that she had filled a vacancy among the maids of honour by appointing Miss Bulteel, Lady Barrington's niece, a very nice girl. Mary Bulteel had a confidence in her own judgment and would speak her mind. On occasion, this would bring her into collision with her royal mistress, who sought to ignore or silence her. Often she found that the Queen literally shut her out. In her diary, she wrote, I became accustomed to see the door leading to the Queen's rooms shut silently behind the page. She had anticipated that friendship with the Queen would come naturally and easily. Instead, she found the Queen did not deviate from her rule of friendliness to all, friendship to none. Over time, the two women developed a greater degree of trust and intimacy. Even then, Mary always felt the Queen's snubs when she reprimanded her for being too forward in her suggestions or too radical in her politics. As late as the 1880s, she confided to her diary that she had been sometimes angry with the Queen for treating me like a charwoman. In the autumn of 1860, Mary Bulteel accompanied the Queen and Prince Albert to Coburg. Mary's opinion of the German court was exactly the same as one of the equerries. She and Henry Ponsonby agreed that the German manners were absurdly stiff. Sharing a joke had struck the spark that brought them together. They made a mature decision to get married, and they did it relatively quickly. Having been to Coburg together in October, in February they went to be introduced to each other's mother. Henry confessed to his brother, Arthur, that they were both impatient to be married. "The worst is that she has to do another waiting, and then my waiting comes again. So the event cannot come off till the end of April at the earliest. We are now undergoing the introductions to each other's families, which is rather nervous." They were married on the 30th of April, 1861, at St. Paul's, Knightsbridge. The Ponsonbys left London 2 weeks after the wedding. They travelled slowly, via Paris, Strasbourg, the Italian lakes, Milan and Vicenza, to Venice. They stayed in Venice for nearly a week, doing all the things tourists do. After a turn in a gondola on the Grand Canal, they sat in the Piazza San Marco and had ices and florins. The gondoliers sang rehearsed songs. The couple were overcharged to sit outside at one of the tables with pink tablecloths. They returned via Padua and Verona, Munich and Cologne. In Cologne, perhaps, the former Mary Bulteel put her foot down. The journey so far had been entirely predictable. It bore the marks of having been planned according to the expected outlines of a honeymoon on the continent. Mary did not particularly like doing what everyone else did. This was the first hint that a responsible and pleasant, though perhaps slightly shapeless young man, had married a woman with determined ideas of her own. Henry made light of the differences they had discovered in each other. In his journal, he drew a picture of himself and Mary at tea time. She is looking at an intricate window with the teapot in her hand. He has drawn himself, ignoring the window and concentrating on a plate of food. His caption reads, "Beautiful window in Vicenza. Some people like fine art better than tea. Some people like tea better than fine art." On their return, Henry and Mary Ponsonby chose to live in Windsor. The house at No. 6, the Cloisters, was not a grace and favour residence, and the Ponsonbys had to pay for their lease and refurbishment of the interior. It would have been impossible, however, to move to such a desirable location within the castle precincts without court connections. They had trouble with the builders, who were slow to get started, and Henry repeatedly went down to Windsor to see how the house was not getting on. Eventually, the Ponsonbys moved into their first home. Not long after, they received a visit from the Queen and Prince Albert. This pleased the newlyweds immensely, though Henry immediately made fun of it all by telling Mary's mother that "our noses have been slightly turned up since this visit, and we're only just beginning to associate with other folks." Within months, Mary was pregnant with their first child. Shortly afterwards, they heard that there was a possibility that Henry's regiment might be ordered to Canada. Tensions between the USA and Britain had heightened as a result of the American Civil War. Then came other news. Prince Albert fell ill with fever. At first, his condition was not considered serious. Henry Ponsonby wrote to his mother, "I find here that the prince is very low and weak, though none of the doctors think badly about him. The Queen is only a little fussed." The next day, the situation was worse. The Queen's denial of the prince's real danger left her unprepared for what was to happen. He died at about 11 that very night. Ponsonby wrote to his mother, "It was a very peaceful ending. The Queen cried most bitterly till they moved her from the room, when she became calmer. They told me that opiates were given her last night, and that she slept very well and is calm today. Ponsonby relied on his income as a query, and this salary ended with the prince's death. A few days later, the news was passed to Henry that Prince Albert's equerries were to be appointed to the Queen, but they were to have a drop in salary. Henry and Mary expected their first baby in May, and this had to be managed on a £200 reduction in pay. On the 5th of May, the handwriting in Mary's diary shifts to Henry's hand. On the 6th, he recorded for her, "Taken ill this morning at 2:30, a little girl born at 10:15. Very well and happy, though rather bad at the time." They named the baby Alberta Victoria. According to Henry, this was by the Queen's wish. The Queen eased her grief by compelling her children and many of her courtiers to pay tribute to her husband. Henry felt that Prince Albert had been kind to him. Both he and Mary liked and looked up to the Queen, so they probably did not mind her telling them what to name their first child. Indeed, they probably regarded it as an honour. Before Alberta was 2 weeks old, Henry heard that he was expected to be in Montreal in less than 2 months' time. Difficult decisions had to be made. The hardest of all was Mary's, to accompany her husband rather than stay with her newborn daughter. With a heavy heart, Mary sent Alberta to stay with her mother. At 9 in the evening on the 9th of July, 1862, the Ponsonbys set off for Montreal. Henry began to serve with his men, observing them go through exercises on open-air field days, while Mary oversaw domestic arrangements. They found a house for the summer and took up country pursuits. Mary insisted on going as the only woman on an all-male expedition to visit the Hudson Bay Company. She enjoyed shooting the rapids on a raft. Most exciting. And was not at all fussy about sleeping with the logging men in a rough wooden hut. She practiced with her husband's rifle. What the soldiers thought of Mrs. Ponsonby being such a crack shot, her husband does not say. After a year, the authorities decided that the crisis had passed and that Henry was no longer needed in Canada. They sailed home on the 5th of September, 1863, and were reunited with their baby daughter. Though he did not yet know it, Henry had returned to Windsor to begin an apprenticeship to the most important office in the Queen's household.
In tomorrow's episode, Queen Victoria...